Pope Leo recently said concerning the upcoming consecration of bishops for the SSPX, quote, "We have invited them, and I'm still considering making another appeal to say, do not do this. Let us live communion in the church. But it is their choice. They must understand what it means for them and for the church." Certainly, division among Christians is always a painful matter, the Pope said. But they refuse to accept certain fundamental elements of the church, beginning with various points of the Second Vatican Council. And if they make those choices, I'm sorry, but we must move forward. So, the question is, what are the issues? Beginning with, and another way of putting this would be originating from, the Second Vatican Council that the SSPX have. That the SSPX says is causing a crisis in the church so bad that it justifies consecrating new bishops without or against papal approval. If you like what you see, please like and share the video and subscribe to the channel, turning on all notifications. If you would like to support this channel, please do so through Buy Me a Coffee. The link is in the description. You can also like and follow us on Facebook, X, Rumble, BitChute, and Substack. My first book, Until the Last Penny, is available both as an ebook and paperback on Amazon. It's a fictional story of a soul's journey through purgatory, and it is unapologetically Catholic. You can get your copy by clicking the link in the description. Bishop Bernard Fillet, one of the current SSPX bishops, once said something to the effect that 90% of the Second Vatican Council is fine. It's the other 10% they can't accept. You see, it is a misconception that the SSPX does not recognize the Second Vatican Council as a legitimate ecumenical council. They do. But they also recognize that the Second Vatican Council is not dogmatic or infallible. It declared nothing binding to the faithful, and some of it, that 10%, goes against the tradition of the church. Therefore, not only are we not obliged to accept the novelties that came from the Second Vatican Council, we are obliged to reject them. So, what are these problems that came out of the Second Vatican Council? First, this video is not meant to give a complete treatment of these issues, but rather show the problem and why the SSPX does what it does. Probably the biggest issue and the easiest to demonstrate is religious liberty. The Second Vatican Council document Dignitatis Humanae says, "This Vatican Council declares that the human person has a right to religious freedom. This freedom means that all men are to be immune from coercion on the part of individuals or of societal groups and of any human power, in such wise that no one is to be forced to act in a manner contrary to his own beliefs, whether privately or publicly, whether alone or in association with others within due limits." The council further declares that the right to religious freedom has its foundation in the very dignity of the human person, as this dignity is known through the revealed word of God and by reason itself. This right of the human person to religious freedom is to be recognized in the constitutional law whereby society is governed, and thus it is to become a civil right. While forced conversion has always been forbidden, and the church has always recognized a certain level of religious toleration, the idea that each man has the right to be in any religion of his choosing, and that right should be recognized by civil governments, is foreign to the constant teaching of the church, and was in fact condemned by several popes around the turn of the 20th century. Quanta Cura by Pius IX says, "From which totally false ideas of social government, they do not fear to foster that erroneous opinion, most fatal in its effects on the Catholic Church and the salvation of souls, called by our predecessor Gregory the 16th an insanity, that liberty of conscience and worship is each man's personal right, which ought to be legally proclaimed and asserted in every rightly constituted society, and that a right resides in the citizens to an absolute liberty, which should be restrained by no authority, whether ecclesiastical or civil, whereby they may be able openly and publicly to manifest and declare any of their ideas whatsoever, either by word of mouth, by press, or any other way." As you can see, those two statements are very much in contradiction of each other. Now, you might say that these popes of the late 1800s and early 1900s were simply giving prudent judgments. I've heard that one. Suitable for their time. But the world has changed, and these condemnations can change and need to change. Not so fast. That same document I quoted by Pius IX also says, "Therefore, by our apostolic authority, we reprobate, proscribe, and condemn all the singular and evil opinions and doctrines severely mentioned in this letter, and will and command that they be thoroughly held by all children of the Catholic Church as reprobate, proscribed, and condemned." That is infallible language. The next problem that the SSPX has with the Second Vatican Council is false ecumenism. The Catholic Church alone is the true religion, outside of which no one can be saved. If a person does get saved who was not in the physical confines of the Catholic Church, it is through the Catholic Church somehow that they were saved, in spite of the fact that they were not Catholic. Nothing in their false religion or false church contributed to their salvation. This fact has been taught by many popes and councils throughout the centuries. I'm not going to go through a whole bunch of quotes on that. Vatican II sought to modify this teaching, saying that the church subsists in the Catholic Church, not that it is the Catholic Church, and that elements of the church, which it includes the Catholic Church, can be found in other churches and even religions, which can save their members. This is at least implied. Nostra Aetate says, which is one of the Second Vatican Council documents, "The Catholic Church rejects nothing that is true and holy of these religions. The Church, therefore, has this exhortation for her sons, prudently and lovingly, through dialogue and collaboration with the followers of other religions, and in witness of Christian faith and life, acknowledge, persevere, and promote the spiritual and moral goods found among these men, as well as the values in their society and cultures. Therefore, we must enter into dialogue and discuss what we have in common, not convert them," which the church has always made. In fact, I will give a couple quotes on that just so people believe me. Pius IX says, "Thus, venerable brethren, it is clear why this apostolic see has never allowed its subject to take part in the assemblies of non-Catholics. There is but one way in which the unity of Christians may be fostered, and that is by furthering the return to the one true church of Christ of those who are separated from it. For far from that one true church, they have in the past fallen away. The one church of Christ is visible to all and will remain, according to the will of its author, exactly the same as he instituted." And Pius XII said, "Only those are really to be included as members of the church who have been baptized and profess the true faith, and who have not had the misfortune of withdrawing from the body or, for grave faults, been cut off by legitimate authority. For in one spirit, says the apostle, we are all baptized into one body, whether Jew or Gentile, whether slave or free. As therefore, in the true Christian community, there is only one body, one spirit, one Lord, and one baptism. So there can only be one faith. And so if a man refuses to listen to the church," the Catholic Church, by the way, "he should be considered, as the Lord commands, as a heathen and a publican. It follows that those who are divided in faith or government cannot be living in one body such as this, and cannot be living the life of its one divine spirit." The next issue that the SSPX has is called collegiality. This issue deals with how bishops receive jurisdiction and governance. The traditional belief in the Catholic Church before Vatican II is that this authority comes from the Pope. The Pope appoints a bishop to a diocese, then gives them this authority. This has been admitted by anyone who's a proponent of the Second Vatican Council and collegiality. They admit, before the Second Vatican Council, this is what the Church believed. I've heard several of them say that. The Second Vatican Council says that bishops receive governance and jurisdiction at their consecration, but it lays dormant unless activated by the Pope. So it would be like this. Let's say you have a room and you want to light the room. The old way of believing was that the Pope goes and he puts the light bulb, he screws it into the light fixture and then turns it on. The new way of looking at it is the Pope walks into the room, the light's already there, he just flips the switch. Vatican II also teaches that the bishops collectively enjoy infallibility. So the Pope is infallible on his own. The bishops collectively are infallible. Now, there's a lot of wiggle room there. You know, they got to be in union with him and this, that, and the other. But Lumen Gentium 25 says, although the individual bishops do not enjoy the prerogative of infallibility, they nonetheless proclaim Christ's doctrine infallibly when, even though dispersed through the world, but still maintaining the bond of communion among themselves and with the successor of Peter, and authentically teach matters of faith and morals, they are in agreement on one position as definitively to be held. This is even more clearly verified when gathered together in an ecumenical council. They are teachers and judges of faith and morals for the universal church, whose definitions must be adhered to with the submission of faith. The infallibility promised to the church resides also in the body of the bishops, when that body exercises the supreme magisterium with the successor of Peter. To these definitions, the assent of the church can never be wanting, on account of the activity of the same Holy Spirit by which the whole flock of Christ is preserved and progresses in unity of faith. This has led to the councils of bishops throughout the world, such as the USCCB, which none of those existed before Vatican II, and it's why these councils have felt they had the right to defy the Pope, the Canadian bishops on contraception, and the German bishops on the Synodal Way. The next issue that the SSPX has with what came out of Vatican II is obviously the new Mass. It's not that the SSPX simply likes the old Mass better than the new Mass. Many scholars have admitted, even those who do not support the SSPX, that while the Pope does have the authority to change the Mass, that authority is limited. There are things in the Mass that cannot be changed, especially if they can be traced to the apostles. The changes in the Novus Ordo go beyond papal authority. Things that cannot be changed were changed, particularly with the offertory, which was changed from a form that clearly expressed a propitiatory sacrifice to a Jewish prayer before meals. Also, only one of the four Eucharistic prayers the priest is allowed to use in the new Mass has the proper canon. That's Eucharistic Prayer 1. Go read that prayer, and I'll bet you've never heard a priest say it. The other side of this is that the Latin Mass, the last manifestation of which is the 1962 Missal, but goes back to at least the 5th century, has never been abrogated. Many, such as myself, believe it cannot be abrogated. This reality is expressed in the strongest language in the papal document Quo Primum. The new rites, I'm going to throw this in here, even though they don't really talk about that as much, but not only did Pope Paul VI change the Mass, he changed all the rites in the church. In some cases, they just simply aren't as good as the old ones, like holy water and exorcism. But others, such as the consecration of bishops, are problematic. Priests are made by bishops, so if there's a problem with the consecration of bishops, that affects the ordaining of priests. If a bishop's consecration is invalid, he cannot make priests. The SSPX did a thorough study and determined that the new rites are valid when done properly, but they lend themselves to novelty, which could cause invalidity when the old rites do not. And the new rites are a departure from the already established rites in the Latin Church. The Council of Trent says that if anyone changes the old rites to new ones, let him be anathema. And that just can't be ignored. The SSPX says that the denial of the traditional teaching since Vatican II and the promulgation of a questionable Mass and rites has caused a crisis in the church so severe that a state of necessity exists, giving them the right to give the faithful the traditional Mass teaching and rites as they were up until Vatican II. In order to do that, they need priests. In order to ordain priests, they need bishops. They don't have enough bishops, and the ones they do are getting old and dying off. Therefore, a state of necessity exists for them to consecrate new bishops without papal approval. Is the situation in the church that bad? The SSPX points to the decline of the Catholic Church since the Second Vatican Council. now realized that the Catholic Church was in great shape in the 1950s. Conversions were up, mass attendance was over 70%, entrance into the priesthood and religious life was at an all-time high. All that changed, except for maybe conversions, but that doesn't mean that those people stay. Mass attendance plummeted to 25%. Men joining the priesthood dropped significantly, and we all know that. Priests and religious started leaving their vocation in droves. And of course, today there's almost no nuns and no monks. And today, four out of every five persons raised in the Catholic Church leaves the faith by the age of 23. This is not the case in the SSPX. I'm not saying no one leaves, but not anywhere near those numbers, which means it's actually worse in the mainstream church. The SSPX says that this is the fault of the new mass primarily because it's what the faithful actually see and that the new mass is a danger to the faith. Does this mean that they can be disobedient, though? Well, canon law does make provisions for people who act out of a state of necessity. Canon 1323 states that a person who acts out of necessity, even if they simply thought that a state of necessity existed, but it wasn't actually real, is not subject to a penalty. And Canon 1324 says that that person is not subject to a latae sententia penalty or an automatic penalty, which is what will be declared. I don't think anyone can accuse the SSPX of not at least thinking there's a state of necessity. So, most likely, it will be announced that they violated canon law when they do these consecrations and incurred a latae sententia excommunication that won't be valid. That's my opinion. And by the way, this is just a real quick video. I wanted to get this out because Pope Leo said that, and I just wanted to kind of get it out there what the issues are. I might do another more professional video going over them in more detail, but for now, this one will just have to do. Until my next video, God bless.